All right, let's carry on a little bit. So let's continue with some of these various defilements. There are ascetics and Brahmins who are cowardly and craven. The Pali words are chambi and birukajatika. And basically these words means like you are fearful and scared kind of person. That's really what they mean. And of course, if you are fearful and scared, of course, being in the forest is going to make it worse. Yeah. So if you already have a tendency towards fear, you have a problem already. And it's going to be amplified in the forest. So you don't want to be too much of a fearful character. This is a very high standard. Yeah. You have to be really pure to live in the forest. None of these defilements are really useful. And the Buddha said, I do not get startled. In other words, I do not kind of have that fear. Yeah. There are ascetics and Brahmins who enjoy possessions, honor, and popularity. Labha, sakara, siloka. So, again, this is a kind of desire that you have in the forest. Your mind wants all of these kind of things. You are still attached to the world. You want to get something out of the world. And because you are attached to the world, wanting to get things out of the world, the downside is also there. You're going to be scared when the world doesn't give you those things. This is the Pali word over here. Yeah? Labha, sakara, siloka. Labha is kind of gain, yeah, is possessions. Sakara here is, go away. Sakara is this one here. It's like honor, people honoring you. And siloka is like fame or popularity at the end there. Labha, sakara, siloka, one of these famous compounds in the suttas. So you don't want to be too worried about those things. You don't want to be too attached to the idea of other people honoring you and being popular with other people. This should not be important. It's kind of interesting in the suttas. The Buddha calls this the dung happiness. Yeah, if you are interested in honor and these things, it's called the dung happiness that you get. So dung happiness, not recommended there. Dung, I don't know. Dung, cow dung can be useful, huh? But don't want too much of it. Dung is very useful if you are a beetle, a dung beetle. Huh? Yeah? Perfume, yeah. So, yeah, but not here, right? So this is Malaysia, so we dung, in Malaysia, dung happiness. So. Labha, sakara, siloka. But I have few wishes. In other words, you have no wishes for these things. This is what the Buddha to be says. There are ascetics and Brahmins who are lazy and lacking in energy. Yeah. If you are lazy and lacking in energy, your mind is not really clear, you're not alert, you're not kind of practicing and exerting yourself, not really interested in the spiritual life, but I am energetic. So now we are moving on to the five spiritual faculties. Energy is one of the five spiritual faculties. So we have seen just before the five hindrances, and now we're going on to the spiritual faculties. And so part of the idea here is that you are lacking in the defilements of the mind, which is the five hindrances, but you have the opposite of the defilements. The opposite defilements are like the spiritual faculties that are the powers of the mind that enables the mind to practice the spiritual path and endure difficulties. It is similar to the seven factors of awakening, but a slightly different angle on these things. So energy, mindfulness, samadhi, and wisdom. And all of these are mentioned here. We'll see that now in a second. When you have these things, they fortify the mind, they strengthen the mind, and enable it to deal with difficulties. That's why they are mentioned in this way here. Brahmins who are unmindful and lacking in situational awareness. Situational awareness is sampajanya. And so you have here, muttasati is being unmindful, or being muddle-minded, or being absent-minded. And then you have asampajanya over here. So these are the words here. So lacking, being muddle-minded, it means that you don't, lacking in clarity is obviously going to be difficult. And lacking a situational awareness means that you don't really understand what is appropriate at any one particular time. That's the idea of situational awareness, sampajanya. We can talk more about that, some of these terms, if you're interested, at a later point. But the Buddha says, I have mindfulness, right? Upatitta sati is the Pali word right here. Mindfulness is established. Upatitta sati, aham asmi, I am. There are ascetics and Brahmins who lack samadhi. They have straying minds. We have here vibhanta citta. The mind is straying. The mind is going all over the place. Vibhanta is also a word which means to disrobe in Pali. Yeah, so when you disrobe, you go astray. Just like the mind goes astray when you don't have samadhi, in the same way the monastic go astray when they disrobe. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? You're going astray. So that's kind of the word that is used for disrobe in the Vinaya Pitaka. But I am accomplished in samadhi. Samadhi sampanno ahangasmi. Sampanno means accomplished. So he has the samadhi, the Buddha to be already, he has all of these powerful qualities of the mind. There are ascetics and Brahmins who are witless and stupid. Who frequent the remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. Those ascetics and Brahmins, they summon unskillful fear and dread because of their defect of witlessness and stupidity. It kind of makes sense that if you are a bit stupid and dull and all these kind of things, of course it's going to have bad effect on your mind in the forest. But I don't frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest, being witless and stupid. I am accomplished in wisdom, panya sampanno. I am one of those noble ones who frequent remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest, accomplished in wisdom. Of course, when we talk about wisdom in this kind of context, we don't really mean the higher wisdom on the Buddhist path. We're not talking about the Buddha to be being a noble one yet. We're talking about a kind of lower kind of wisdom, but the wisdom that understands basically an upright mind that understands things as far as is possible without having the full insight into the nature of reality. So he is already kind of very much on the right track, but not really fully there yet, obviously. Seeing this accomplishment of wisdom in myself, I felt even more unruffled about staying in the forest. Yeah, so this gives you an idea of some of the qualities that are necessary to stay in the forest. Basically, it means that you have to have a pure mind and you have to have strong spiritual qualities. That's really what it comes down to. And the more you have of that, and essentially all of this can be summarized really in one word, jhana. Yeah, jhana, absorption. If you have that jhana and absorption, then you have all of these qualities. Remember, one of the things the Buddha says in the suttas about jhana is that if you have jhana, then you have wisdom. If you have wisdom, you have jhana. These are two sides of the same coin. You cannot actually attain a jhana state without having a high degree of wisdom. It's the wisdom of precisely of giving up a large part of the sensory world. So this means the Buddha to be is ready to stay in the forest, yeah? But as we shall see, even if you have all of those good qualities, it still can be a bit challenging, which is interesting here. Then I thought, there are certain nights that are recognized as specially portentous, the 14th, the 15th, and the 8th of the fortnight. Yeah, portentous, like auspicious, yeah, that are special kind of nights with special qualities to them. And these are the portentous nights. And the 14th, 15th, and the 8th fortnight, these are like the full moon and the new moon days. And the 8th is like the half moon, sometimes called the quarter moon, but usually it's really the half moon. And so, I don't know if you... It's very interesting. When you are in the forest, in the dark forest, on the full moon night, it's very beautiful. Yeah? What was that? you can see with the moonlight. You can walk through the forest when the moon is up, yeah, and you can see the moon. There's no light pollution. If you're in the city, you can't usually see even the stars because of all the pollution for the light. And this moonlight is a very soft, kind of gentle and beautiful light. It reflects the light from the sun. And it's actually very nice to be in the forest at that time. And you can see why these are called the auspicious nights. And this is the time when the monastics would come out, they would give Dhamma talks, or the lay people would come to those Dhamma talks, yeah, and they would hang out with the monastics, and they would sit maybe meditation all night. That's quite common in places like Thailand, for example, because there are auspicious nights. Yeah, it's very beautiful. And I remember as a child, we used to go skiing in the middle of the night, yeah, when the full moon was out, because when there's snow everywhere, the moon also reflects in the snow, and it's very kind of magical time when that happens. And then there's the opposite, when the moon, there's no moon, and all there is starlight. And when all there is starlight, the forest is incredibly dark, yeah, because the stars only give a tiny bit of light. And if it is overcast, there's cloudy, even the stars are gone, then it's pitch black in the forest. That's also kind of nice, when it's pitch black, and you're kind of walking around, no idea where you are, the nearest you bump into the tree. Oops. Yeah, and this is kind of what it is like. And that's also actually quite interesting on those nights too, because they're also quite auspicious in a way. So these are the auspicious nights. And these are the nights, and also they can be quite scary at the same time, yeah, because the full moon, either you get inspired, or you become a werewolf. Those are the two options. Yeah, either you go a bit crazy, or you become inspired on those nights. And this is kind of, so there's kind of a kind of thin edge there. You know, which way am I going to go? Wisdom or madness? Kind of not entirely clear which way you're going to go. And this is why these nights are both scary and inspiring at the same time, especially when it's really dark. So, and of course, these are the nights that the Buddha to be really tests himself to the maximum, right? On such nights, why don't I stay in awe-inspiring and hair-raising shrines? Yeah, these are the shrines in the forest, the kind of places where people might leave some food for the ghost and that kind of stuff, right? If this is what happens in the shrines in ancient India, and even today in many Buddhist countries. You have a shrine, you leave some food there for the departed. Yeah, the ghost will come and enjoy that food far away in the parks, the forest, and the trees. In such dwelling places, hopefully I might see that fear and dread. This is the Buddha to be. Yeah, he wants to find out whether he can arouse that fear and dread. Even though he's already so pure, he's trying, testing himself to the maximum to see whether he can find the fear and dread. So this is how, are you ready for this kind of practice? Get plunged deep into the forest, the places where all the ghosts are likely to be, yeah? And then you see what happens when you do that. And maybe you will feel some fear and dread. Most people will run far away, but this is the Buddha to be, testing himself to the maximum. And of course, the idea here, what I think the Buddha is trying to do, he is trying to find out whether he still has some defilements, right? This is really what he's trying to do. So this is what is going on here. And so what do you think? Do you think that the Buddha is going to see some fear and dread? Maybe even the Buddha to be, not the Buddha, the Buddha to be, I should say. Let's see what happens next. This is getting very exciting, isn't it? Sometime later, that is what I did. In other words, he went to those remote hair-raising shrines, yeah, the scary places in the forest. As I was staying there, a deer came by, or a peacock snapped a twig, or the wind rustled the leaves. Yeah, this is what I was saying before. When you are in these very scary places and you hear what is ordinary sounds, suddenly they become magnified. Yeah, this is kind of just a peacock snapping a twig. These things can become very scary. The wind rustling the leaves, right? That actually can be quite interesting in the forest. Then I thought, is this that fear and dread coming? Then I thought, why do I always meditate, or why do I always dwell expecting that fear and terror to come? Why don't I get rid of that fear and terror just as it comes, while remaining just as I am? Instead of just expecting it, let me deal with it, let me overcome this nonsense, yeah, and get out of this, and purify myself even further, so that none of these things actually can arise. Then that fear and dread came upon me as I was walking. I didn't stand still or sit down or lie down until I had got rid of that fear and dread while walking. Then that fear and dread came upon me as I was standing. I didn't walk or sit down or lie down until I got rid of that fear and dread while standing. The fear and dread came upon me as I was sitting. I didn't lie down or stand still or walk until I got rid of that fear and dread while sitting. Then that fear and dread came upon me as I was lying down. I didn't sit up or stand still or walk until I got rid of that fear and dread while lying down. So this is the kind of commitment, yeah, of the Buddha to be, the kind of the full commitment, doing things that are really hard to do, plunging into the forest where most people would be really, really scared to do. And he does that to test himself to the limit. And I would really recommend all of you to sometimes test yourself a little bit, yeah? Not maybe in this way. We shouldn't try to be Buddhas. If we try to be Buddhas, we're going to be in big trouble if we try to do that. But we should always test ourselves a little bit. I think the majority of people in the world, we are too limited by fear very often. We don't allow ourselves to try new things, to test ourselves in new ways, because we are too fearful. We underestimate our own abilities. We tend to underestimate our power and ability to deal with things. That is what I have always found in my life, underestimating myself. Actually, I can deal with quite a lot. And I'm sure the same is true for you. You can actually deal with things, yeah? And other people will often put you down and say, oh, be careful, you can't maybe deal with that. Don't listen too much to other people, because other people will tend to hold you back, even though you are able to deal with things. So don't be too afraid in this world. Fear stops you from growing. Fear stops you from achieving your dreams, achieving things that are greater than what you normally think. Go forth, try new things, challenge your defilements, challenge yourself in new ways, because that is what makes life interesting. That is what actually gives you the ability to grow. Take the Buddha as your example. Don't go as far as the Buddha to be, but go forward, do more than you're doing already. Come to Perth, stay at Jhana Grove. I'm sometimes surprised. People say, oh, it's too dangerous, Jhana Grove, too far away. I'm not sure if I will be able to deal with it. You know, it's really dark there. And they are really scared to come to Australia. It is the least scary place in the world, Jhana Grove, right? It's super duper safe. You know, so do little things like that. Do things where you follow your dreams a little bit. Don't allow yourself to be stopped by the little fears in life. It doesn't have to be Jhana Grove. It can be anywhere. Do things without allowing yourself to be limited in your life. Because if you do, you're never going to experience anything. You're never going to go anywhere. Trust yourself. Trust your ability to deal with things in the world. Then you're going to be headed for more, a better life, a richer life, a more spiritual life, a life which is more meaningful. And then I guarantee you, you're going to die more satisfied. It was interesting, this lady I mentioned before, Anita Murjani, this kind of Indian background who lived in Singapore and Hong Kong, she was saying exactly these things. Look up her video. It's a very interesting video. Her name is Anita Murjani, Morjani. And Morjani. And her video is available on TED Talks, TEDx or whatever it's called. And she talks about her experiences. You know the TED Talks, yeah? Very famous talks on the internet, yeah? And she talks about her experience. And she said one of the things that she realized after she had her near-death experience, how she always lived in fear before that. She was afraid of everything in the world. Everything was just fear. And she realized how she was destroying her own life by always living in fear, never daring to kind of live fully. Yeah, and kind of living with all these limits all the time. And she said this was one of the worst things about life. And she realized actually we need to just express ourselves to kind of live more fully. Otherwise, life is never complete, never satisfying. So please don't allow yourself to be limited in this way. And then as you do these things, life becomes more satisfying, more complete, and more better as a consequence. And you will actually make more progress on the spiritual path as well if you do that. So follow the Buddha's example here. Don't hold back. Do things where you are out of your depth. Don't be afraid of being out of your depth sometimes. Yeah, do things where you feel that your little me, maybe I can't do it. Of course you can do it. Try it. See what happens. The worst thing that can happen is that you fail. And if you fail, big deal, right? The worst thing that can happen is that you die. And if you die, you are a good person. You go to a good destination anyway, so you're okay here. Sometimes if you think about the worst thing that can happen to you and that you can deal with that, then there is no issue anymore. All right. So this is what the Buddha did. Yeah, and he went so far and he didn't give up until he overcame these things. He really took it all the way. There are some ascetics and Brahmins who perceive that it's day when in fact it's night. Or perceive that it's night when in fact it is day. This meditation of theirs is delusion, I say. I perceive that it's night when in fact it is night. I perceive that it's day when in fact it is day. The idea here is that there are some people who are deluded. They don't see things right. They see black as white and white as black. And they don't really have a proper perception of reality. But the Buddha, he faces things completely. The Buddha-to-be, because he faces things completely, that is why he's able to overcome his delusion. And if there's anyone of whom it might be rightly said that the being not liable to delusion has arisen in the world for the welfare and happiness of the people, for the compassion for the world, for the benefit, welfare and happiness of gods and humans, it is of me that this should be said. A being not liable to delusion is the Buddha to be. This is the superpower of the Buddha. This is why the Buddha-to-be is able to find awakening, because he's able to actually not be deluded by anything, facing reality squarely. Yeah, this is what this is about. This is such an important thing here. This is what we were talking about yesterday. It was interesting yesterday when we had that question about this person who was worried when I was saying that we should face our own old age. Yeah, you look at yourself in the mirror instead of trying to run away from that old age, running away from that sickness. Yeah, we should face it a little bit, because when we face it, we are not deluding ourselves. This is similar to what we are seeing here. That person was saying, oh, does that mean we shouldn't care about our body and all of these kind of things? But it is really about this idea of not being deluded about reality, seeing things as clearly as we possibly can. Because when we are not deluded, then we can make good decisions about what we should be doing with our lives. If we choose delusion all the time, we choose not to see reality, it means that we are hiding behind things, and we will never really be able to make really good decisions about what is important in life. But the point is, to be able to face delusion, you have to have a certain strength inside of you. If you haven't got that strength and then you try to face delusion, actually it's going to be very despairing and very difficult for you. You're not ready to face reality. Yeah, you know what I mean? If you face too much suffering in your life and you haven't got the inner strength to deal with it, actually it can drive you crazy as a consequence. So that what we're trying to do then on the spiritual path is, on the one hand, we build up good qualities so we feel stable, we feel solid, we feel strong, we feel that we have a source of happiness within. that can withstand the problems of the world. So on the one hand, we build up the good qualities, and we build up a sense of independence and resilience in the world. That resilience and independence are very, very important to be able to deal with the realities. And then when we build up those good qualities that make us resilient and stable and independent, then we have the ability to deal with the non-delusion and seeing reality as it actually is. So don't try to be non-deluded and seeing reality if you are not ready. Yeah, if your mind isn't strong enough. If you try when your mind isn't strong enough, it's not going to work. So things have to work in tandem. And this is also why, if you want to have really profound insight into the nature of reality, which basically means the ability to see non-self and these kind of things, which is the deepest kind of insights on the Buddhist path, this is why you need samadhi to be able to do that. Because samadhi gives you the strength of mind, the power, the ability to deal with things that are incredibly hard to see. You have the independence, you have the imperturbability, to be able to deal with very difficult things. That is the purpose of samadhi. So do things in tandem, right? Do things in the right way. See, be non-deluded, just like the Buddha is, so that you can make good decisions in your life. Don't try to hide reality. If we look away from reality as it actually is, it's actually a very bad idea, because it destroys our life eventually. But make sure that you're able to deal with it by building up good qualities. Then you're dealing with this in the right way. Find that balance. Balance is so important in the world. If you don't live with balance, if you get out of balance, out of kilter, then you're in trouble as a consequence. Okay, let's do a little bit of meditation again. All right. Any questions, please? Any comments?
Good afternoon, Ajahn.
Good afternoon.
I have this question regarding going into seclusion and living in solitude in the forest. Is there a possibility where there's a very thin line here? Lay person like me and a lot of my Kalyana mitras may fall into a situation where we may turn into an introvert. And it's like a very fine line because we have not purified our mind yet. We are not in samadhi yet. We have not purified our body, speech, and mind.
Yeah.
So is there a danger for us to move in that direction?
You mean to go crazy or to whatever? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Introverts or crazy.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Well, there is always that danger. There is always that danger there, and that's why, you know, when we talk about going into solitude, there are different degrees of going into solitude. And one degree is to go to a retreat center, yeah? That is already a little bit of solitude because you get out of your ordinary life, your ordinary things. And because of that, getting away from that, that is already what we talk about citta viveka. Citta viveka is the seclusion of the mind. It is secluded from the ordinary senses and the ordinary worldly things. That's already a positive thing. So if you come to a place like Jhana Grove, you are away from your ordinary life. You get your own room, your own bathroom, but there are people around. You're not completely by yourself. You're not left completely to your own devices. And that is kind of a halfway house. So you do things gradually, right? You do things slowly, and then you see how it works. Or you can come and stay in a monastery for a while. In a monastery, there are usually people around. You can almost choose exactly how much interaction you want to have when you stay in a monastery. So you have the opportunity to kind of, you know, feel what works for you, what doesn't work for you. That's what I would recommend. And make sure you have a good teacher around, someone you can consult with, you can ask questions of. You can ask them, am I crazy now or not? Am I crazy or enlightened? I'm not sure. One of the two. Yeah. If you think you are either crazy or enlightened, usually you're crazy. So it's not to be too concerned. As long as you have common sense, you're going to be okay. And the way to measure these things in your meditation is to feel, how does the meditation feel? And if your meditation feels good, then your mind is quite clear, you're gaining a bit of happiness and joy, you're gaining good qualities, then usually you're okay. But if you feel that your meditation, you're becoming deluded and confused and maybe lots of desires, all kind of things, well, then that is when you should stop the meditation because it's not giving the right results. As long as you have common sense, you're going to go a long way, not have to be too concerned. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dear Ajahn.
Bobby.
What about graveyard meditation?
Graveyard meditation, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, you can try that, and that is, one of the nice things about graveyard meditation, often you get left in peace, no one else comes into the graveyard, so you get a lot of solitude that way. So that can be nice, and it also is a reminder of death, yeah, because death is around you, so it's a reminder, so it can be very peaceful, so try some of these things out. Have you done that here at the BGF? No, you haven't? Okay. Try it out, see what happens. Find a graveyard far away in the forest, yeah? A really scary graveyard somewhere. Something that has been swallowed up by the jungle. You make a path through, you find this ancient graveyard. You take the whole BGF there, yeah? You kind of That is the part. I was in Melbourne not so long ago, and in Melbourne, this monastery is about a couple of hours outside of Melbourne, and it's kind of very close to the forest. And when you walk into the forest, there's an ancient cemetery in the middle of the forest there. It's true. I think many of the people there had names, Chinese names, actually. There may have been a lot of Chinese people in that area. Chinese people of Chinese background, they came to Australia quite early. Some of them came already 200 years ago, and they were part of the gold mining and this kind of things down there. And so there's this ancient cemetery in the forest there, yeah? And I thought, wow, this is really cool. This is the kind of place you want to meditate in, right? So see if you can find something similar here in Malaysia. That would be really, 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 really nice. So yeah, good thinking, Bobby. This is why you are the leader of the crowd here.
Achan, new graveyard safer or old graveyard safer?
Old graveyard much better, right? Maybe a mixture, because the new graveyard, maybe there's more chances of ghosts on the new graveyard. I was thinking, I don't know. Try it and see what works the best. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, Ajahn, I think you were saying that if it's good once a while, we need to scare ourselves. So I'm thinking, what's the point of doing that? Is it to develop the understanding that all this are due to our figment of imagination? All the scary things are due to our figment of imagination.
By
scaring ourselves once a while, and we develop ability to counter the fear. Is it the whole purpose of doing that?
The purpose is not to develop fear as such. The purpose is really to see if you have any defilements. Yeah, that's kind of the purpose. And for most people, it's not necessary, because for most people are not at the same level as the Buddha to be. He's already very advanced in his practice, you know. So for most people, it's not actually required. But if you enjoy meditation practice, sometimes it can be nice to go somewhere far away, even if it is a little bit scary, you know. So I would say for most people, enough challenges in daily life to kind of, you know, keep the mind pure and all these kind of things. So this is really quite extreme. The reason I'm looking at it is just to talk a bit about Dhamma around this issue, and not so much that I think people should do exactly this. That's not really the point. The point is just that if you have a very pure mind, very good things come with that. The fact that you're never scared, you're never fearful, and you have this ability to live a life to a very kind of high ability. You can have samadhi by yourself in the forest, and all these positive things come with that. So I don't think I would recommend this particular practice for most people. But sometimes it is good to confront, you know, your demons and your fears a little bit, to see what is there and to see what happens, you know, not to be too conservative and too fearful in life, to hold yourself back a little bit. I believe in challenging oneself. If you never challenge yourself, you never grow. So it's important.
I don't know, one monk is always challenges us to do this practice. Say, imagine you go to a room alone. Just imagine. You say to yourself, there's something behind you. You guarantee you'll be feeling something behind you.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay, good. Yeah.
Is that a good practice?
No. All right.
Well, I just want to share about ghost stories.
Okay. Excellent. No, you can't. You should take the seat up here, actually, because this is important. This is important.
Well, when I was growing up, you know, we always, you know, the people always talk about ghosts and stuff. When I was young, I was also scared of ghosts, you know, when we go in the dark and have to have somebody with us. But, you know, since I've been ordained for many years now, I've been practicing it all. And it seemed that fear, I don't do anything about the fear. I just, you know, when I feel like I live alone in my place, you know, nobody's around at night, you know, I leave my kuti and have big sala, and some other kuti. So at night, completely silent. I don't turn on the light or anything. Maybe 5 minutes light, turn on the light, and completely in the dark. So I'm, you know, just to be, I just set my mind to, you know, to the moment, not thinking about fear is the future, right? More like in the future, what's going to happen? Or yeah. I just, you know, go sleep. And then I sleep really well, you know, deep sleep. You know, I mean, usually, I never heard hardly anything, but some night, I could hear. I had lived next to the sala. I have a big sala. And some night, it woke me up like somebody had a party up there. A lot of noise, you know. Like, I thought maybe at my nephew's house. My nephew's house, not that near. It's like 100 meters away. I thought maybe they have a party there. But I didn't think so. A few nights I heard, you know, it woke me up. I felt like, you know, woman and men were talking very loud, having party. And then I didn't pay attention. And I fell back to sleep. But this is just last month. And nothing ever happened to me before. That's so clear. I came back from visiting Pikuni in the northeast. And when I came back the first morning, I usually set up the alarm at 4:30 to wake up. But I usually, you know, wake up before the alarm. And before that 4:30, I heard the voice, the woman's voice. It said, "Nimon ka." You know, in Thai, "nimon" means like, you know, get churn.
Invitation.
Yeah. I really heard that voice, and I never heard it so clear like that. And she was, she probably like, next to my bed. Huh? No, I just listened and said, where's that voice come from? You know? And nobody's there. But it seemed like she was right next to my bed. Just, what else? What else here? Because nobody lives here, you know? Nobody's here. But it's a little voice, woman's voice, like kind of nice, kind of sound. Nimon ka. You know? Kind of strange, you know? And I never, you know, had this kind of, such a clear experience here, you know, the real voice. If it's somebody else around, maybe, oh, they're calling me or something, but nobody's around. So, you know, real.
Nice story.
And many stories boast about my place, but somebody else saw it, but I didn't saw it.
Great, thank you so much.
So you
thank
know, you know, there's real ghosts.
Thank you, Venerable. So that's wonderful. So please tell more ghost stories, because this is really good fun, you know. So, but let's have a break now for half an hour, and we'll see you back again after 4:45.